So this is the director of the client, Sally Hewitt. She presented this morning, so I shall over to you.
I wondered if you could expand a little bit more on this. You said more than once that you're concerned that the Alliance not be a funding agency, and in fact, the fact that it isn't has changed the conversation around the communion about these issues. Can you say a bit more about that?
Yes. What is meant is that we can get away from discussions about donor and donee relations, and we can talk about what the needs of the community are and then build on from there. And I think particularly given, you know, the history of relations between the developing world and the developed world, I think to break with the idea that that it's about financial relations, I think is energising. What's also been very evident is that it's actually completely transformed some of the meetings, so that we had a week-long workshop on economic empowerment where people were talking about what they could do, not what they couldn't do, and they were talking about building up microfinance schemes in their community. And then the issue about any capital investment came much further down the line once they needed to expand. And then they also identified being able to get some of that in, you know, within Africa, in particular in partnership with one of the major banks there that works in microfinance. I think also to have the Alliance not be a funding agency recognises the reality of the world that's changing, where, you know, Brazil has got a bigger economy now than the UK, and the old pecking order is changing. So I think it has paved the way for a very different approach to international development and global relations. And I think that is a really important strategy. Now, as you probably heard, there was a discussion from, it was basically East and Northern Africa, about then the Alliance looking at funding. And what we were actually talking about was much more about a more rational approach among some of the funding agencies, in particular towards funding faith-based organisations, and talking about a better coordination of what's there, and also talking about how the Alliance can support local projects when they do decide to go for, if and when they decide to go for any external funding, how they might be able to do that. And, of course, the Open University modules are partly addressed to deal with that, because the financial module looks at how you put together a financial programme, given they've done the work programming module, how you put together a budget, issues about financial accountability, and then how you might present that to a possible donor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But when I first took on this job, I thought, gosh, you know, if you're a development agency and you don't do funding, what on earth do you do? But actually, the reality is that it opens up a completely different way of working, and it opens up much more constructive opportunities for talking about the way in which you confront poverty and injustice.
Thank you.
A province like Nigeria has got 21 million pretty active Anglicans, and while the Naira isn't worth a whole lot, they can raise a lot of money real quick.
That's right.
I mean, they've funded things like GAFCON, $2 million in 3 weeks they're able to raise. Can you tap into any of that sort of money for economic development, say, in Nigeria, when you've got a real problem with Boko Haram in the north and you've got a real serious problem of Islamic persecution? With Nigeria having so much sort of money on the ground, are you able to tap into that sort of thing? Because I know they've given money to Congo, and they're probably giving money to Rwanda as well too. what would be the problem of getting money?
I think there's... it was very interesting. It's the person from West Africa particularly talked about being able to, and he was from the Table of West Africa. I think it was one of the I think he was Nigerian, but I'm not actually sure, and I should know. But he was a person who identified the fact that the Alliance didn't need to be a funding agency because, you know, Africa had its own funds, and that I thought was very telling, because that is much more the kind of discussion that we tend to have at Alliance events, where people say, listen, you know, we've got money, you know, or we can get money. That, you know, the money's a kind of second order issue. Now, I think it isn't so much that the Alliance would tap into money, because we don't raise funds, we don't act as a conduit for funds either. So that it would be very much about the role that the church in Nigeria wanted to play, and the way in which it saw itself working. And I think that it was very interesting to hear that the discussion at that West African table was about having a regional discussion about how they might engage in discussion about development, relief and advocacy as a region. And I thought that was a really positive and valuable contribution. When it comes to the discussion about the relations between the Christian and Muslim communities, those are issues which arise in a number of countries, and in which we have been having some discussions, both when I went with our Africa facilitator on a visit to Nigeria, but also in discussions in Pakistan as well. And it's a particular responsibility of the facilitator in Bangladesh to support churches working in a minority context.
Have you thought of approaching Trinity Wall Street, which is pretty rich, one of the richest churches in the world, for an out-and-out grant for Anglican Alliance, sort of like $1 million, so you could be more of a funding agency? Have you thought of that?
We obviously have to secure our finances from the future. There are a number of church-based entities which have, you know, which I hope will fund us. The Lambeth Partners have been phenomenally generous, I have to say, both with their time and attention as well as their money. But I personally don't. I mean, I don't think I can't see the Alliance becoming a funding agency. I just think, you know, we're not set up to do that, and I think that our part of our strength has been actually that we don't do that. So, for example, our funding, you say, well, what do we use our money for? You know, we commissioned and were the first voluntary organisation, or, you know, charity, whatever you want to call us, that has ever commissioned, apparently, the Open University to do a course like this. We, you know, we paid for that. That was all money up front. For the Commonwealth Professional Fellowship Scheme, we paid for the facilitator to work with the Commonwealth Fellows. The Commonwealth Scholarship Commission actually only pays for a certain amount of that work. We pay for the facilitators, but we don't do grant aiding. And I think it's one of our strengths that we don't.
Something that's on the mind of a number of people today, and you mentioned, was the most recent example of the sort of ongoing string of natural disasters that the communion faces, today being Sandy in the U.S., which will be disastrous, but not quite as disastrous as it was a few days ago in the Caribbean. But does that prospect ever feel daunting? Because in the midst of all of this sort of advocacy and networking work, these things tend to happen. And people come looking to the church for help.
Yeah, the relief work has been easily the most challenging. And that's partly because of just the sheer scale of it and the fact that there are so many countries in the communion that face just the most horrific disasters, natural and conflict related. And it seems that, well, a week doesn't go by without several communities experiencing disasters. And quite a number of those are ones that never ever make the headlines. And so we have lots of phone calls from places where, you know, there might have been a flood, which has never surfaced in the international arena, but nonetheless people have had their homes destroyed and their crops destroyed and livelihoods gone and so on. It would have been very simple to have said, well, you know, we just deal with disasters in poor countries. But what came out of the consultations, and very rightly so, was that actually you have to respond to need wherever it arises, and that you can't say that a hurricane victim in New York is less than a hurricane victim in a Pacific island, you know, or a Caribbean island. And what we've had to think is about how we respond. So in some cases, it may be support through prayer. In other areas, it may be through trying to provide contacts that will enable people to get some cash.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that we're doing is looking at how we can build the capacity of those churches in areas with repeated disasters so that they can effectively partner with a larger agency and, you know, do some more sort of long-term preventive work. I think one of the very interesting areas is that of the church providing psychosocial support. And that's also where the church in the developed world, or in the more developed countries, where some of they have, perhaps partly because, you know, the government provides all the practical needs, where they have developed some of the expertise in providing the psychosocial support, and I hope that therefore that we can deploy that more in some of the areas, you know, some of the poorer parts of the world. It is a very difficult, it is the most complex area of our work.
Thank you.